Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Patrick, your favorite band sucks.
Yeah, well, your favorite band sucks.
I'm rubber, you're glue. Whatever you say bounces off of me and sticks to you.
I know you are, but what am I?
Yeah, well, the jerk store called and they're running out of you. It's Friday, Patrick.
It is Friday, Jim. Glad to be here.
Special treat on Friday. We have the conclusion of the interview that you recorded in Nashville, right?
It was really, really fun. I want to say thank you very much to Tyler for he set up a little space for us to meet in East Nashville, which is really cool. There's a bunch of places that Tyler showed me, and that so it was really fun, and I thank him for that. In this episode, it's important, I think, to with that background, because he's going to talk about the reaction he's had from sort of the Nashville establishment.
Oh, really?
Which is interesting. Yeah. And the amazing thing that happened, you'll hear him talk about this. He called it the greatest email he's ever gotten in his life.
Okay.
So it's a really big breakthrough. And he's going to talk a little bit about season two, but he doesn't give away too much. But if you're into podcasting, you've ever tried to do a podcast or appeared on one or worked on one or edited one, you're going to find this one really, really, really interesting because he goes into some of the nuts and bolts of how he puts it together. And I think that'll be fascinating. And also, when you looked at the episode list of Cocaine and Rhinestones for season one, there was one episode I didn't play at all. And I didn't play it even up to the point where we had this interview.
Okay.
And that was the one about Wynonna Judd.
Okay.
But Tyler changed my mind when he told me about it. And then I listened to it on the way back from Nashville on the airplane, and it was amazing.
So you didn't want to because you just weren't interested in her?
Yeah, I just don't like the Judds.
Okay, I gotcha.
I don't like, you know, I mean, I told
that Tyler. That era of country
I just don't.
Music,
yeah,
the mainstream country.
Like in the mid-80s, I just don't, you know, it's when I got turned off to it, so... But I obviously adore all the older 40s and 50s and 30s and 60s stuff.
Right. But here's the thing about what Tyler does, and we mentioned this a couple of days ago, that even if on its face you think I'm not going to be interested in that subject matter, he's got a way to craft a great story around that, right?
Yeah. And the Judge one ended up being like one of my favorites
Good to hear.
Yeah.
Okay. So before we get into last part of this interview, this is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And then, of course, Tyler Mahan Co's podcast is called Cocaine and Rhinestones. So go check that out too. And should we play the tape?
Yeah. Let's jump in.
All right.
When burdens seem to overcome that higher power, who's faithful and refuses none, that higher power, then why ask men to help you through? That higher power, they're helpless pilgrims just like you. That higher power, let's sing it, shout it, walk it, talk it. That higher power, lay down your soul, cause Jesus bought it. That higher power, amen.
Was the impact when Cocaine and Rhinestones came out immediate? Was it immediate that this was going to be something that people were going to notice and it was different and you know, certain, I guess you could call them old school or veteran people were going to be paying attention to it?
I haven't heard anything negative from what you might call the establishment, but that's not their tactic. I've heard nothing from most of the establishment. I do want to point out that the Country Music Hall of Fame has invited me to use their archives for season two.
Wow, that's fantastic.
That's potentially the greatest email I've ever received in my life.
That's amazing.
It blew my mind.
Yeah.
And it's not like you can use our archives if you shut up about this.
Yeah.
It's just like, hey, you can come use our archives whenever you want to. Yeah. That's incredible, especially for what I'm doing, which is digging around, not necessarily trying to find the dirt, but if I find it and it needs to be talked about because it's the only way you can understand the story, I'm going to be honest
there
about
you go.
It. That was incredibly refreshing to have someone from, you know, as establishment as you can get, just reach out and say, hey, we're on board.
Right.
That's huge. But also there are a lot of people where it's just radio silence.
Yeah.
And there are some people who I know have been outspoken on my behalf and supportive of the podcast who have not major, but suffered minor consequences.
Is that right?
For doing that.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, but I'm going to win, you know, because I don't have sponsors that I need to please. There's no one else involved at all. So there's really no string that anyone can pull to get me to stop, you know?
Yep. Yeah, and there is, and forgive me, I don't recall exactly which episode, but there is one point when you essentially lay your manifesto out that I am going to tell the story of 20th century country music. I'm going to do it from beginning to end. No one's going to stop me. I'm on this train and I'm not getting off.
Well, that came from everyone. One of the most common questions I get is, hey, are you going to do an episode on this person?
Right.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of this person. Are you going to do an episode on them? And like we said a little bit earlier, I made the first season on spec, practically. Yeah. And it got a lot of really positive attention. People are thirsty for this, you know, because nothing like this exists. I don't think anything like this exists in any genre of music, first of all. I should say that I honestly have not listened to a single podcast that is about music unless I've been invited to go on it.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I've you know, because I don't want to rip anyone off. You know, I don't want to.
Well, that's refreshing. Yeah.
I don't want to bite a style. Yeah. And, but I guarantee you no one's doing anything like this in any medium, documentary, biopic, movie, anything on country music, just cause I know this has never been done.
Yeah.
And so I knew that that was gonna be a thing that people didn't even know they wanted, but as soon as they see it, it's the only thing they care about. And I didn't know how many people that was going to apply to. I just knew there were some people, and there were a lot more of them than I thought there were, which is amazing for me. And then at the end of the season, I set up a Patreon because I really wasn't sure how monetization was going to happen.
Yeah.
But I spend 100 hours on every episode. It probably takes me 2 weeks to put together one episode of the podcast.
You know, having listened to these things several times, you're not just tossing that off to be grandiose or gather attention.
No.
It really is that much time.
If you have any experience making a podcast at all you have to do is listen to it, and anyone can vouch.
It's clear. And you also give all the books you use for research away.
Yeah, I have to read all that.
Yeah.
I placed an order just last night. I placed the order for all my books for season two. It was a $300 book order from used books on Amazon. $300.
God, are there that many country music used books that you don't have?
No, that's the great thing about this genre that I'm working in is it's a world where all these people have put their stories down in their own words.
Yeah, there are
and
a ton of other
there is a wealth of information out there, and almost none of these books have been digitized. You can't buy an ebook of them, so you really do just have to get the book and read it. Back to that country music version of BuzzFeed thing, most people aren't doing that.
Yeah.
Most people aren't buying these books and reading them.
Which you think something's going to pop up in your wake that is a shorter version, a more condensed version of what you're trying to pull off?
I would love to think so. Mm-hmm. I would love to think that it would just inspire people to want to try. A lot of the attention that it's gotten has been from music writers and music journalists.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of feelings that they wish they felt like they could get away with something like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think you can. I think if anyone wants to, they should.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
You should try.
Why did you decide to do it in seasons?
Well, I have the impression that most podcasts don't do seasons and most podcasts are weekly. That's the impression I have of the medium.
I would say that's 90% true. Yeah.
And when I started, that was originally the idea. And then I realized once I really got into it and realized what my approach to even telling these stories was going to be, you know, the whole tying strings to other strings that you wouldn't necessarily expect to be tied together. I realized that was essentially what needed to happen in every episode. I need to tie a string to something that's outside of this episode.
Yeah.
Because it isn't an island of purity it isn't an island of narrative. It isn't an island of anything.
Yeah.
It's all a landmass. It's a continent.
And I actually jotted a quote down here. If I do it one episode at a time, there's nowhere for me to stand back and see the bigger picture before I show it to anyone.
Yeah.
Else.
And that's because I think that what I'm talking about, I think one reason why I felt like I needed to do this and I had to do this, it was an obligation for me to do this, was I'm not sure there's anyone else that is in my general age bracket with my level of experience in the world, from major record labels down to not having a label and just existing on tour with an underground fan following. You know, from top to bottom, I've been there. And not many 33-year-olds can say that.
Yeah, no,
you know?
I would say that's very true.
And then also just the being a autodidact my entire life, just wanting to read forever. And the general awareness, not expertise, but just a general awareness of technology. And if I didn't know how to use the recording software, at least I knew how to start a computer, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. whereas most people who had all these other things that I just talked about would be in their 60s or 70s yeah. and have don't even know what a podcast is.
Right.
You know? So I really felt like I was just in this cross section where I don't know if anyone else is even in this cross section.
And I would add to that a natural gift for storytelling.
Thank you. Yeah. I'll take the compliment.
Now, do you write these out, you know, it's, as yeah. an entire script? That's yeah, amazing. How long does that part take?
That's the easiest part.
That's the easiest part.
Writing is as easy as talking for me. Uh-huh. And I mean, the way that I talk the way that I write is actually very conversational.
Yeah.
So that part's super easy. Yeah. The worst part is recording my own vocal and then editing it because my recording conditions are not optimal mm-hmm. yet.
Yep.
So I have to have at least two takes of everything that's said. So however long an episode is, I stand at a microphone for at least twice that long.
That's amazing.
And usually three times that long. Because I often, there will often be one phrase that turns out to be tricky. Not that I have a speech impediment, but everyone hits a tricky word for them or something like
anything,
that.
Anything, yeah, yeah, exactly.
And it'll be, have you seen that movie, The Aviator with Leonardo DiCaprio, where he gets hung up on Show Me the Blueprints? Yeah. It'll be like that. I'll be alone in a basement just saying a line of words 30 times. And so when that happens, now we're looking at, I've got 6 hours of me talking that I now have to edit down into an hour and a half or 2 hours. And that is brutal because
that's brutal to think about.
It doesn't matter if you hate your voice or not. If you sit down and have to listen, that takes 30 hours. It takes me a 30-hour session. And it's not something that I really like to break up into 2 days because I have to remember where I'm at, exactly where I'm at.
I know exactly what you mean. When you get in that editing zone, you don't want to get out of it because you know where everything is.
So,
right?
And then the other thing is I felt rushed because I started working on the podcast in May. At some point in there, I found out that Mike Judge, one of the biggest names in television, is going to make an animated series.
There's nothing worse than a hillbilly with a hit record.
People love what he does across the board, but when Mike Judge does something animated on TV, it's a humongous deal.
It'll be big.
So I felt like I needed to get out. I felt like I needed to get in front of people as soon as possible. And there were a few other things like that that happened too. So I started releasing. When I released the first episode, I had my scripts for everyone written, but I only had about half the season edited and I didn't have anything except for like two episodes ahead recorded. So the entire rest of the time that episodes were coming out, I was in the production process of recording my vocal, editing it, and then doing all the mixing of all the clips and everything that are in there. This is probably like super in the weeds for anyone who doesn't make a podcast. You know.
But all the while, you didn't know if it was going to be successful. You had no idea what kind of audience it was going to reach while you're doing that,
I knew that I had to put in 100%. Well, because in order for it to be a thing that brings anything in for me to allow me to continue to do it, I had to show people what I could do. So if I wasn't showing them what I could do, if I was only showing them half of what I could do, what would be the point in that?
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And also I'm just an extremist. You know, if I do something, I'm going to do it as hard as I can all the way. And this was just the thing. It became an obsession. So glad that it was a thing that people enjoy. And I'm so glad that the Patreon thing got set up. I was really worried that that was just going to bomb. You know, yeah. I was worried that everyone was going to be like, oh yeah, we like listening to it, but you, we're not giving you any money. That is not the case.
But that's still an option.
It could happen, I guess. I could piss everyone off tomorrow, I guess. Yeah. But that gives me not room to relax, but the normal bare minimum amount of breathing room that I would want to have just as far as I feel like I don't have to rush now.
Yeah.
And I'm still going to be working very hard because I do feel obligated to these people who are supporting mm-hmm. what I'm doing now, which is a whole new dynamic.
I'm going to ask about that. We interviewed Matthew Sweet not long ago and he made his most recent record based on all fan donations. And we asked about the pressure and he said, it wasn't less or more, but it was different.
Yeah. Cause every artist deals with that. From the beginning of recorded music, where you gain an audience and you want to feel like you have creative liberty to do whatever you want to do. But also, let's be real. How many of you are going to go in there and pull a Radiohead? You know, not very many people are going to do that. You know, and I mean, there's something to be said for doing that on one level, but then on another level, do you have an obligation to these people? And that's always been there, but the direct relationship from artist to audience, that's pretty new. Yeah. There's no one in the middle taking a cut. There's not all this marketing and there's not all these other things. So now it's like, well, wait, are these people my boss now? If I do something that makes them mad, is that okay? These are things that I'm going to find out because I don't intend to change very much about what I'm doing. But it does make me feel like I can at least have all my vocals recorded before I start releasing episodes.
Got it. Okay.
So that, because there were things in the first season that I feel just as a listener do suffer from me feeling rushed. And there were certain, just like certain ad libs at the mic. When I'm actually recording, sometimes I'll draw a line right there that I didn't see before, and something will come out, and now I have to fact check that, you know.
Right,
and if this episode needs to be online in 3 hours, this is now a problem, you know, because this would really enhance the story a lot if I get to draw this additional line,
but
also it would completely discredit me if what I think is true and what I threw off as on hand knowledge turns out to not be true.
I will say this. I think it's one of the most remarkable podcasts going right now, and it's certainly at the top of my list. And I think you're right to say that there isn't really, you know, anything that you can draw a line to that's being done in a similar way, especially with the care and the attention and the obvious passion, you know, for not only the music, but the storytelling. And I think those that are still listening to us and haven't like clicked off and listened to Cocaine and Rhinestones will also be amazed by the amount of music that you get in there. And so I imagine some of that requires record shopping and, you know, borrowing and all that kind of stuff. Cause not everything is on YouTube. Most of it is, but not quite everything.
There's a lot of expenses. And also just a side note, just as far as all the music that's in there. I mean, if you think you know what country music is, there's a decent chance you have no clue. Just if you're listening to this right now in 2018, there's a decent chance you've never heard country music in your life. So if you think you're just not interested, again, you probably aren't listening to this anymore, but give it a shot.
Man, I got a ton of records in my basement and a lot of them are country records and I've never even heard of them. An amazing song like The Backside of Dallas, which
isn't that
like
such a good song?
One of my favorite songs.
On the backside of Dallas, in a dingy bar on a worn out stool, she sits. And her trembling hand fumbles for another king size filter cigarette. She blows a puff of smoke, then settles back and looks across the light blue haze. And from the back,
it's almost a funk song. It's like a funk country song.
It's a mind-blowing tune. It really is, especially in context, the way you introduce it. So I'll just throw this out there as a statement of fact and see how you react to it, and I'll try to frame it. I've listened to every single episode at least once, except for one. There's one I haven't played at all, and I'm not sure if I will. I'm sure I will while waiting for the second season to come out. Which one do you think it might be?
Wynonna Judd.
That's it. Exactly. Talk to me a little bit about that. Where's the modern end of 20th century music gonna come in, and how do you think about it in context? Because obviously the subjects you've presented, you know, from Spade Cooley through Don Rich, and you know, even up to you know, Shelby Singleton and some of those other people, you know, are what they are. But you know,
well, I think it's for one thing, I think it's short-sighted to pretend that we can say what will be regarded as country music in 100 years.
Yeah.
And because no one has a clue, and especially about what's happening right now, you know.
And which episode was it where you go through sort of the history of?
That was the intro to the Tom T. Hall episode, right? Which that's is one of my favorite things.
Oh, that was absolutely fantastic! The way you frame what radio is.
And I think I cut you off a little bit, but it's an intro where I'm talking about country music radio and the history of country music radio. And basically, what I do is I break it down by decade and using song clips. You can just straight up hear the stark contrast in a decade to decade of country music radio. And I go from, you know, not quote unquote the beginning, but I go from early up until the 90s, which is the cutoff point for my podcast. It's just the 20th century. And then I go backwards. I go from now to backwards with examples of what we would call the real country music being made at the same time as all this other music that was coming out of Nashville and the establishment. And, it's just a, you know, takes a few minutes to really just illustrate what we're talking about when we say that's not real country music. This is real country music. Well, who are any of us to say that we can say that, you know? And also I'm very aware of my role as sort of an informational gatekeeper in this show. The last thing I want to do is let my personal taste in music affect this thing. You know, the full title of the show is Cocaine and Rhinestones, The History of Country Music. I'm an asshole if I say that's not real country music. I'm not going to talk about that just because that may be what I think, but it deserves better than that. The subject deserves better than that. And I like to think that I am an empathetic person enough to be able to pull myself out of it and give my story to it. Back to how this got started, though. Wynonna Judd, that was not a problem for me. Because when you listen to that episode in the liner notes, you'll hear the Judds are the music of my childhood.
Oh, interesting.
Just because they were so successful on country radio, you could not escape them.
And that was my problem with them,
I have to go back and I have to listen to essentially an artist's discography to make an episode because I have to make choices about which songs are going to be in the episode and why, and which ones need to be unpacked and why, things like that. So listening to the Judds music made the hair on my arm stand up because it was just like transporting my consciousness back to, you know, four years old. Mm-hmm. This is the biggest song on the radio. I never even realized how ingrained this song is to my being, the fabric of my existence, my entire universe, you know. So I didn't have that problem. I knew a lot of people would. I know you're going to listen to the episode.
Oh, yeah, I will. I'll probably listen to it on the way home.
I'm pretty certain you're going to like it a lot.
All right.
What I didn't know about that story was, I'll just go ahead and tell you because I say all this in the liner notes. Okay. When I chose that subject for an episode, and this gets back to your original question too, mm-hmm. which is good. The only reason I wanted to talk about Wynonna Judd in the first place, some of the episodes in the first season of the podcast are song episodes where the whole episode is just about a song. That episode was just going to be about the song No One Else on Earth. That was just going to be a song episode. And what I wanted to examine there, that's just a straight up pop song.
How did you get to me? No one else on earth could ever hurt me, break my heart the way.
If anyone hasn't heard that song, it's just a pop song, and it was a number one country song. The effect it had on her career sort of is and isn't what you would think it would have. It was the biggest hit she'd ever had to that point in her career, and so it had certain things happen as a result of that, but also because of what it was, these other things happened as a result of that, and I don't think anyone has ever really looked at it in the way that I looked at it in that show, but in order to even understand how any of that got to the situation for that to happen, I got her autobiography, and Naomi, her mother, is the other Judd in the Judds. She's also published two autobiographies. So I got these books and I'm reading them, and all of a sudden I get to this one part in the story, and it was just, it was something that I think a lot of fans of country music would know. I've never been a person who's paid attention to tabloids at all, you know? So I was not really aware of how much of a presence this family has had in tabloids, you know, at all. So I got to this thing where it was just this bombshell revelation for me, but probably a lot of people did know it. And then it became, and it's inseparable. You can't get to this one song and why it happened. You can't get there without this bombshell thing happening.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, this can't be a song episode. It's got to be all about her life. That was actually the longest script that I wrote for the first season. Yeah. And the reason why is because my assumption that everyone already knew this revelation. And so I didn't want to tease it. I didn't want to leave it out and then reveal it.
Yeah.
So I had to write this script in this other weird way to do it, and it ended up being so long. And so then, like, pretty much a last minute decision, I decided to switch back to, you know, what felt almost like a cliche way of telling it, which is leave the reveal later at the end and let it all come crashing down at once, basically.
Right. In the context of the song.
And it really works. Oh, it really does work.
You got me hooked.
And again, I'm not just saying that to be cocky, which probably the ninth time I've said that in this episode. And I've heard from so many people, and that was why I was able to guess it so quickly.
Right,
I've heard from so many people that were like, I almost didn't even press play on that, but it's amazing. Okay. So it's other people's feedback that I'm basing it on.
That's
yeah.
For those who haven't already found it, as I said, it's cocaineandrhinestones.com, right? You can find everything there is to find there. Is that the best place to
everybody? You should also check out yfbspod.com for the other podcasts
I do. Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that for a minute. So this is kind of the flip side. Why your favorite band sucks.
Your favorite band sucks.
And you do that with a co-host.
Yeah, my friend's name is Mark Mosley.
Uh-huh.
We came up with the idea of it while I had already had the idea for Cocaine and Rhinestones, but neither one went public. And so they were both being worked on at the same time. I mean, the elevator pitch is short and sweet. You know, we pick a band that is lionized, some band that you're not allowed to talk shit on. And we dedicate about 45 minutes of our lives to saying the worst things imaginable about, you know, extremely well-regarded musicians. The first two episodes are on the Beatles and the Rolling Stones.
Yeah,
so
you start right at the top, man.
If you've ever suffered through that debate at a bar about which band is worse, they both suck in our opinion. That's the professional opinion of the podcast, by the way.
It was all going fine, folks, until Kiss came up.
Yeah.
And then I got upset.
You had a problem with the Kiss episode.
That's right. So that's more of a thing where you don't prepare quite as much, but you still take it, you know.
Well, this...
It's not like you don't know what you're talking about when you talk about these bands.
But also, if I say something that's objectively untrue, I sincerely do not care.
Right.
You know, I don't feel any obligation to fact check anything that I'm saying. I'm going on the general zeitgeist surrounding this band. I'm just getting in there and causing as much damage as I can. And I keep saying I, which sounds sort of self-centered when I have a co-host, but Mark does practically zero preparation for the episodes. If you listen to it, you'll hear that we're pretty much working off my notes, but the dynamic is pretty great because you get to hear him react to things that I found out about that he's never heard of before.
Yeah.
His reactions always kill me. They're so good.
Some people say that about my co-host Jim and I, that I don't do any preparation, but that's not the case, folks. You know that's not true. Okay, well, Tyler, this has been amazing. I can't tell you how thrilling it's been for me to sit here and talk to you and for you to give us this time. And I hope everybody becomes as big of a fan of Cocaine and Rhinestones as I am. So thank you very, very much for your time. I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, this was fun.
Who's gonna bring you breakfast in bed? Who's gonna whisper good night? Who's gonna keep you as warm as toast on those cold winter nights? And who's gonna be your puppy dog when I'm a thing of the past? Hey, who's gonna mow your grass? Hey, who's gonna
So that was it. Pretty fascinating stuff, right? That he actually spends that much time and takes that much care putting together one episode of this podcast is kind of hard to believe. 100 hours on one show.
Yeah. But he's not doing it every day.
No,
right?
He's not doing it every day.
Yeah. So there's that.
That's
Tyler.
Right. Try that, buddy. No, seriously, he was a really cool guy, and it was really nice to meet him and fun. And you can tell he's wickedly intelligent and has a real gift for storytelling, and that really comes through when you listen to his podcast. So,
all right, well, Tyler, if you're ever in the DC area,
yep,
then we'll return the favor and you can come on our show.
Be amazing.
Well, I mean, you kind of were on our show, yeah. But you know what I mean. We'll do some recording out here in DC, and you know, you never know. Maybe he needs to come to the Smithsonian for some research, yeah, or the National Archives or something like that, right? Yeah. So, Tyler, let us know.
You did hear him right there at one point mention his other podcast,
yeah,
that
okay,
he does, which is kind of the flip side of the coin. Whereas Cocaine and Rhinestones is very prepared and researched and thorough, the other one's kind of, it's more or less stand-up comedy, yeah, you know, or situation comedy that I kind of hear. So give that a listen too, but not until you've caught up with all your Rock in the Suburbs.
And you can do that by listening
every day.
As we mentioned, you can find us, mm-hmm, on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Audio Boom, Google Play, Spotify,
mixtapes,
all that, yeah, stuff. Yeah, and the mixtapes and all those places, right? Also, please rate and review Rock in the Suburbs on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, that really helps.
Really help us out. We've gotten a couple nice reviews lately, and we thank people for that.
Really nice.
And yeah, really, I mean, undeservedly so.
Yeah, it's
maybe
weird
to some extent, but really nice. So if anybody else could, you know, just, the rating is super easy. You just click on a certain number of stars.
Uh-huh, 5 stars.
5 stars.
Mm-hmm,
and
that's
then,
the one.
Yep. And then if you, and you can just stop there. But it would be great if you also do a little review, and it could just be like a sentence. That's all you need.
That's all you
right?
need. I'd appreciate it.
Yep. Also, if you want to correspond with us, you can email us rock@suburbspod.com,
mm-hmm,
or you can call and leave a message, 612-440-1984. Or you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, @suburbspod. And people do go on there and make lots of comments.
Yeah,
things
they
like
do.
That. Sometimes we respond.
I like that.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, I like that when conversation happens.
And one thing we've started to do lately on, mostly on Twitter and Instagram, is post photos of like albums that we're listening to.
Yeah, that's
so if
been
you go
going
on
great.
There
now
and
playing.
Look at now playing, mm-hmm, yeah, on there. You can just see what
I like it.
What we're into lately.
Yeah.
All right, let's get out of here. It's the weekend. We have big plans.
Yeah, we got to record our podcast more.
And the 100 hours. And
that's right.
Thanks again to Tyler Manco. And
oh,
check
yeah.
out his
thanks,
podcast,
Tyler.
Cocaine mm-hmm. and Rhinestones, and the other podcast that you mentioned, which is called...
Your Favorite Band Sucks.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
Probably true.
Yeah.
All right, I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you guys next week.
Storms brewing in this heart of mine. This ain't no crazy dream. I know that it's real. You're someone else's love now. You're not mine.
I'm an asshole if I say that's not real country music. I'm not going to talk about that.